Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome to another edition of the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, my good friend Taylor Zarzer joins. He's the host of the first team on Sirius XM College Sports Nation with Greg McElroy. He also does play-by-play for ESPN. He'll be in Baton Rouge this weekend for LSU's spring game. Then he'll be in Augusta, Georgia next week for the Masters. He does a lot of PGA work. On television, on radio, so you can hear him all next week on the Masters in Augusta. And then we'll talk to him about all those things. We'll talk about the Final Four this weekend. It's Auburn and Virginia, Michigan State and Texas Tech, just like everyone predicted on their brackets. So we'll talk about the Final Four. We'll talk about the Masters. We'll joke around about spring football a little bit. And Taylor's getting ready to run his first marathon. It's the Boston Marathon in about 10 days. So we'll talk about that a good bit as well. So pretty fun, 45 minutes or so with Taylor Zarzer. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we get to that, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal. It's Highway 6 West in Oxford, just next door to the Oxford Exxon. They've got the 10 crystals for $6 going now. If you're wanting to hang out, watch the Final Four, chill, you can get that. You can pick any five for $5.55. You can get a pup, a dog, a chick, whatever you're looking for, five for $5.55. They have the $3 square meal, of course. They've got scrambler breakfast bowls. If you're grabbing something early to start your day, they've got that as well. All of that at the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford is in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. No hassle, no haggle. Just easy car buying experience. Get your quote. The rest is up to you. You can shop that quote around, use it as a baseline moving forward, or you can do what I've done three times now, and that's let Corey and the people at Clark Ford take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Great service after the sale, delivery options, all of those things. There at Clark Ford and Amory. Again, 662-257-1900. Tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden. You'll save $500 off your already great bottom line. We're also coming to you thanks to LB's Meat Market. It's at 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. If you're coming up this weekend for the Florida series or next weekend for Kentucky or later in the month for Double Decker, you owe it to yourself to get in touch with Greg Jones. It's the freshest cuts in all of Oxford. They got a great selection. The product is absolutely fantastic. Call Greg ahead of time, 662-259-2999. Call him, tell him what you want. He'll have it packaged for you. You can grab it and have it on the grill that very evening, or you can just drop in and peruse, check out their great selection of steak, of chicken, pork, seafood fresh from the Gulf, all of their sausages as we get into sausage weather. The chicken sausages are my favorite. He turned me on to the lamb sausage not long ago. It is fantastic as well. So there's a lot to like. If you're coming up for a baseball weekend, coming up for the Grove Bowl, coming up for Double Decker, you want to have dinner at your condo or whatnot, that's the absolutely best place to go. LB's Meat Market in Oxford. Again, 2008 University Avenue in Oxford. When you stop at LB's, grab a six-pack from that beer fridge. Create your own craft beer six-pack, and you'll save $3 off of it just by telling Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. The Beer Garden is also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. One of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis. so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. J-Lowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. And we're brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM's really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing, it's all done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad, a Mississippian, and a really good friend of ours is a partner in the firm. So get in touch with them and see just how great they are. Email Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, that address is Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Now let's listen to my interview with Taylor Zarzer, about 45 minutes. I think you'll really enjoy it. Here's Taylor. Taylor, welcome back into the show. Always good to visit with you. We're going to touch on a number of things. We'll get into some personal stuff in a few minutes, and that probably will be far and away the very best part of this podcast. It'll certainly be the most fun part of it for me. But I know some of the people want to hear your thoughts on a couple of things that that you follow, and you'll be in Augusta. So I'm going to get your thoughts on the Masters in a minute. I'll start with the Final Four because it's right around the corner. People are going to hear this on Friday, the day before the Final Four. Does this one excite you at all, or is there disappointment that Duke's not in it? We don't have that sideshow, that Carolina's not in it, Kentucky's not in it. Is it, are you glad that the Blue Bloods are gone, or is it more fun when the Blue Bloods are in it?
It's more fun. I have to tell you that I'm disappointed that Zion Williamson is not in the Final Four. I think a lot of people share that feeling this year because he was so responsible, and Duke, to I guess a greater degree, was so responsible for the interest level in college basketball being so high and the ratings being as high as they were, especially this past Sunday, that I am bummed that he's not going to be in the Final Four. We as a society spend far too much time discussing what's wrong with the world, and we are ready to pounce when someone does something wrong, when a celebrity of any sort, of any kind, does something wrong. This guy did everything right. He didn't ask for all the attention. Because of how great he is, he commanded all of that attention, and he handled it so well. He was a great teammate. Every time he opened his mouth publicly, he said the right thing. By all accounts, he's a great kid. So I wanted him, I wanted to see him play another game or two. You know, it had nothing to do with Duke. Duke's won plenty of championships. I don't feel badly. I don't think anybody feels badly for Coach K. You know, I'm sure he'll have chances to win more, but I just wanted, this was his only chance, you know? So I kind of wanted to see him in the Final Four, but I, having said that, I'm excited about the matchups. Now, I must tell you that I'm calling the big LSU spring football game on SEC Network this Saturday. So I might miss portions as I'm traveling back. I might miss portions of the Virginia-Auburn game, but I'm really excited about that game. I don't know that I'm that excited about Michigan State, Texas Tech. Ideally, I wish I was kind of missing part of that game instead of missing part of Virginia Auburn. But both of us have lived in the state of Alabama for a long time in our past. And right now, Auburn is dealing with the most dominance Alabama has ever had, which is saying a lot in football. And Auburn has a top, I don't know what you would say. I'd say top 15 college football program.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
That's probably fair.
Yeah.
15 to 20. Yeah.
Okay. With great history, national championships, every other year, they're really good. You know, they have a rich history and no one seems to care because Alabama is so dominant. The fact that their response is their basketball team going to the first ever Final Four, I just think is great for their fans. And how amazing would it be if they won the national championship in basketball. I don't think that any of us have really wrapped our minds around that yet. Like, are they really going to win another game or two? But come on, based off of what they just accomplished, they certainly could do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they just beat Kansas, Kentucky, and Carolina in consecutive games in order to get there, beat Tennessee twice in the last few weeks. They're beating every great team in front of them. One of their best players just had his career end, and it didn't stop them from beating Kentucky, who they lost to by 27 points to the time they played before that. He is must-see television. So I'll be fascinated to watch that game. I think Tony Bennett is one of the more impressive people I've ever been around.
Yeah.
As a human being. And the way that he has been able to handle the loss of a one seed in the moment last year and in the following 12 months is a remarkable story. And if their bounce back is winning a national championship, that'd just be amazing. So I'm really interested in that game. Michigan State, Texas Tech, I'll just be honest, doesn't do a whole lot for me. I think Texas Tech, the fact that they're in the Final Four is an incredible achievement. The way that this guy, Chris Beard, that almost nobody knows anything about, has been able to put this team together is incredible. Culver's a pro who's going to have a long, great career, but I don't know that that does much for people. But I'm really excited about that first game.
Yeah, you know, so I thought of several things I want to ask you. I don't want to forget. Don't let me forget to ask you about Bennett, because I was in Columbia, and they were there too. Because had Ole Miss won, they would have played Virginia in the second round. And so I listened to his press conference, and he seemed like a really – I'll start here. Don't let me forget to go back to Auburn spring football.
LSU spring football.
No, I want to – well, it's an Auburn-Alabama thing that I wanted to goof around. I'm going to goof around with you about it. Because you and I both had to once tease this famous spring football show. I'm because of who I cover and some of the things that I have experienced through said coverage over the last few years, I am typically skeptical of guys who come across as pure as the driven snow, as Bennett does. Yet I asked people, and they're like, no, it's legitimate. That's who he is. He's a really good guy. Really kind of shaped by his dad, and his dad's so fiery, and that made him very calm and all of those things. You've been around him a bunch because of living in ACC country and doing some of the things that you've done professionally. He's legitimately that guy, right? The guy that you see on TV, that's who he is?
He walks the walk. I mean, his discipline, his commitment to being the best version of himself is as high as anyone I know. Many people in my personal life would point to my wife and say that she's like that, and she is. I live with her. She is like that. He reminds me of her and being the best version of himself every time you're around him. And that's the biggest compliment I could ever give somebody, what I just said. I don't think he is that self-aware. Maybe he is, but I don't get the impression that he is. So when he answers a question in a press conference and he gives you this answer and you're thinking, my gosh, I just would strive to be the kind of person that Tony Bennett is. It's not contrived. He didn't know that he was going to be asked that and asked, you know, what does he lean on, his faith and his family? How is he the best version of himself all the time? And he gives you such a thoughtful answer in those settings. He's just, you watch him, his eyes aren't moving around the room. I don't mean this to be critical of other coaches, but
you can. You know,
you've seen so
I'm not
many
gonna be
of
bothered.
Them. What's that?
I said, you can criticize other coaches. It's not going to bother me.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Like, when you ask them a question, they look and see who's paying attention, and their eyes move around the room, and they're putting on a bit of a performance.
Oh yeah.
When he's asked a question, he looks just at that human being, and he's having a conversation with them. And if anyone else benefits from the conversation, that's fine. But he doesn't change based off of how many people are paying attention. And I've experienced that in a one-on-one setting with him, and I've experienced that with hundreds of others in the room. He is. He's the real deal. And I'll be fascinated to see if they can finish this off. The one thing I'll say, Neil, about Tony Bennett, we're trained to scrutinize all the time, is if you watch that Virginia-Purdue game down the stretch, which was riveting to watch,
yeah.
I still don't know how Virginia won it. I mean, Diakite hits this miracle shot, you know, to send it to overtime, and then they won the game. Edwards was out of body, you know, with those threes that he was hitting for Purdue. But in the last few minutes of the game, in crunch time with the season on the line, Tony Bennett makes me nervous. And that's the one thing. If we're just scrutinizing him as a coach, he makes me nervous. He doesn't have the same level of confidence that I would want a coach to have, like an Izzo has, like a Bruce Pearl has, with the season on the line. And I do wonder if that's going to bite him in the butt in the Final Four. There were a couple of times in the last few minutes in regulation where I wondered, does he understand what he needs to be doing in this situation? Is his team prepared for this moment? Are we going to get the best version of Virginia on this offensive possession? So there are still some in-game things, especially with the season on the line, that I question and that have certainly bit great Virginia teams in the last few years. And I wonder if that happens in the Final Four. Bruce Pearl is Jim Valvano reincarnated. Give me one. You got to win one game, and I am going to be sweating furiously and physically and mentally exhausted and give everything I have. No matter what you think of me as a human being, I will lose my mind doing anything and everything possible to win this game. And I do wonder how much that matters when the two face off Saturday.
I'm 49 years old. I'm not changing much. You know what I mean? I am who I am. I've tried to be different, but I'm who I am. And I watched Bruce Pearl. It's like one of the reasons I really enjoyed covering this Ole Miss basketball team, because Kermit Davis is so animated, and every possession is just – I'm not picking on him here. I've loved watching him. Though, I mean, I would get bored in games watching basketball and just start watching either him or his family, and I was immediately entertained because of how emotional they were. This comes across like I'm making fun, and I'm not at all. It's fun to watch guys who are so emotionally invested in a random possession. You know, like Ole Miss would have a possession where someone did something stupid, made a dumb pass or whatever, and he would turn, and his body language was basically like, I cannot believe, you know, and I love that. And so I always watch guys like Bennett and these calm, button-down guys, and I'm so envious. Because I would love to be like that. I would love to be that composed and that calm, and like where the soundtrack to my life was just a symphony, just nice and easy, birds chirping. But
let me know what that's like, because I have no idea.
Yeah, in reality, I have no idea what that's like. And so when I watch Bruce Pearl coach, I always think to myself, if you were a college basketball coach, Neil, that's what you would look like. You would look like the guy who is sweating through his sport coat, is a complete wreck by the end, and yet it makes it so fun. I mean, because now I'm kind of
it does.
I'm cheering for Auburn. I've been around Bruce a good bit over the course of just like you have, just covering the SEC. And I like those Auburn kids. They seem like nice kids. I have no idea, but in my mind's eye, they've worked hard and they've built this program to this place. And it's fun to see them do well and all of that. And then I have this mental image of like being back in Mobile, and I can almost see the NSP people coming in going, okay, we've talked about Auburn basketball enough. Let's get back to spring football, talking spring football. And it's such a the narrative in that state has to be absolutely hilarious right now, because Nick Saban's holding court every 3 or 4 days to talk about spring football, and you're breaking down the depth charts and stuff. The games don't get played for another 5 months. Meanwhile, Auburn's in the Final Four for the first time ever. If Alabama's been to the Final Four, I can't remember when it's been. I know they got to the Elite Eight a few years ago. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's so conflicted. If they were back in the newspaper days, this would be so hard for newspapers, because everything was so designed to be as close to 50-50 as possible. You could almost see the old sports editors going, all right, well, so what do? We got Auburn in the Final Four. We got to cover it. We got to send our beat writer to Minneapolis. What do we do about Auburn spring football? Because we've got to have Auburn spring football to match all the Alabama spring football coverage that we have. You'd have all that, the newspaper meetings, instead of someone just going, hey, you know what?
Yeah.
This is a hell of a historic weekend. They're in the Final Four. Let's just blow that out. The rest of it will fall into place. It was never that way. It was always, we've got to figure out how to balance this out, instead of it just being, they're in the Final Four. Let's have fun with it.
Well, it's interesting you say this, because, you know, doing the radio show on SiriusXM each day with Greg McElroy, who lives in Birmingham, who obviously is one of the more identifiable Alabama players in recent memory, we've been talking about this the last few days. And I've asked him, I've said, you've got to try to tell us what it's like to live in Birmingham right now with this going on. And he has said exactly what you said. He said, it's just kind of weird that Auburn, it's a huge story, and everybody's like, man, this is an amazing achievement. And you heard what I said. I think it's hilarious. I mean, there's a part of me that's like, this is the greatest response, you know, for their basketball team to do this while Alabama's having this football dominance. And I do. If they won the national championship, I think that would be outstanding for that state, that rivalry, all the dynamic and everything, how it would change it to a degree. I just think that would be incredible. But it is, I don't think that, at least at this moment, I don't think that the people that live in that state really know what to do with it. Is that part of them, you know, all the Alabama fans want to cheer against them, but they don't really hate Auburn basketball, you know? And then of course, everyone that's an Auburn fan wants to jump from the deep end all in on the story. And if you don't have a dog in the fight, you want to get in on it. But it's a weird dynamic, because they're conditioned this time of year to think about the spring football games and to think to some degree about college football. I hope it changes the landscape. If Auburn wins two more games and wins a national championship, I hope that changes things to it. Certainly it's not going to have a huge influence on college football, but it would be fun, as you started saying those names, Alabama and Auburn, that in somewhere in your mind you'd say, hey, remember Auburn won a national championship in basketball? That'd be incredible.
Oh, yeah, because the league's really good right now. I mean, we do this propaganda thing every July in football. We're talking, oh, it's the best league in the country. And it probably is. But, you know, we'll go to the media days and stuff, and everyone, you know, you'd think we're covering 14 behemoths. And the truth is, Alabama's really good, and Georgia's really good, and everybody else, there's significant steps down, and the bottom of the league is every bit as bad as the bottom of any other league in basketball right now. Like this year, there was one bad team, or a couple of teams that sort of underachieved, and then everybody else was pretty good. And I mean, anybody could beat anybody, and it was like 1 through 11 like that, and it was kind of fun. I mean, it was legitimately a good league the last 2 years, and it just keeps getting better. Auburn's in the Final Four, and Auburn was the 5 seed.
Yeah,
in the SEC tournament, and they were, had they lost to Tennessee that day at the regular season finale, and I was hoping they would, because it's all about me, and I wanted Ole Miss to play in the 2:30 game on Thursday, not the 6 o'clock game. I wanted them to play in the 2:30 game for my entertainment purposes only, and had Auburn lost to Tennessee in that regular season finale, Ole Miss would have been the 5, and Auburn would have been the 6 or the 7. I mean, and they're in the Final Four. It speaks volumes to how good the SEC is.
Yeah, and I mean, look at South Carolina 2 years ago, coming out of nowhere, even more so than what Auburn's doing this year to get to the Final Four. I mean, that team wasn't a good team. That was a team that was, okay, I guess they're an NCAA tournament team that somehow got hot, won 4 games, and went to the Final Four and almost went to the national championship game. So it is kind of crazy. Neil, I would argue this, and we've talked a lot about this the last few days, especially with Buzz Williams now taking the Texas A&M job. What's going on in basketball right now is never been, in the SEC, has never been equaled in any conference in football or basketball in terms of the depth of the coaching. You have 13 coaches right now that have incredible resumes. We don't know what's going on. If Vanderbilt hires Jerry Stackhouse, that is a really curious hire. I mean, the guy has we've seen this over and over again, a guy that has no college coaching experience not working at that level. No matter how much basketball they know, no matter how great of a person they are, or if they're a leader, if you don't have any college coaching experience, it almost never, ever, ever works. And for Vanderbilt to make that decision is head-scratching. But aside from that, the other 13 coaches in the league are extremely accomplished head coaches, all of them. And it before they got to their current school and or at their current school. And it's crazy. I really am impressed that Greg Sankey wanted to make this kind of commitment, and Mike Trangese came in and helped influence some of the athletic directors in the conference to make more of a commitment, and how that literally would pay off for the league. And it has. The concern I have, Neil, is just how extremely difficult it's going to be for these coaches to be successful in the years to come, and how volatile it's going to be. Avery Johnson did not do enough in the 4 years he was the head coach of Alabama, but make no mistake, he was fired and bought out because of Auburn and Tennessee's success.
Yes.
There's no question that
that's
part of the reason why that's happened. I mean, Ole Miss too, Mississippi State, the tournament teams, all his neighbors are in the tournament. That's part of the reason why they're buying him out and firing him after 4 years. If this was 10 years ago, there's no way in the world Avery Johnson. If it was 5 years ago, there's no way they would have fired Avery Johnson. They said, let's try this another year or two. That's the thing, is I do wonder about the pressure that these guys are under, because they better win. We always talk about, man, you better win in the SEC in football or you're going to get fired. That's going to happen in basketball now, too.
Yeah, the proof of that may be in the fact that Arkansas appears to be having a hard time.
Yeah. I mean, that's another good example of a team that 2 years ago should have beaten the eventual national champions, North Carolina, in the round of 32. And now their coach, after not getting Daniel Gafford to the tournament as a sophomore, gets fired. That's the way it's working now.
I thought Musselman would take it, and it appears that he's not going to take it. And I guess they'll try to hit the home run with Chris Beard, but I don't see them pulling that off. And then after that, I don't know where they go. And that 10 years ago was a great job. I don't know that anybody would call it a great job now.
Yeah, I think it's still a really good job, Neil. But I think the reason why people are probably saying, I don't know if I want to do this, is because of how hard it's going to be.
Yeah.
I think the passion and the commitment level is there. But, you know, listen, I understand Buzz Williams, what he's doing. He loves Texas A&M. It's a part of who he is. He coached there. He's going to make more money there. But I think it's going to be more difficult for him to be successful at Virginia Tech or at Texas A&M than it was at Virginia Tech or Marquette. He did a really good job at Virginia Tech, and his record at Virginia Tech was not as good as his record at Marquette. In college basketball, you don't have to be in one of these great power leagues to be extremely successful, make a lot of money, and be extremely successful as you do in football. And I think that's what's going to be interesting in the SEC in years to come with these vacancies, is people are going to look around and say, man, this is impossible. Why would I can go to a school that has two or three really good, great coaches in the league and have a much better chance of being successful. It's going to be fascinating to follow that.
Yeah, it really is, because I think I know how good Ole Miss is going to be in a couple of years. And he's a really good – Davis, man, he impressed me. And you look around the league and, like, Florida's going to be better next year. South Carolina's going to be better next year. Georgia's going to be better next year. Kentucky's going to be Kentucky. Tennessee's probably going to take a small step back, but they've got a lot of talent coming into there. And the league's just really, really good. There's no free win anywhere, nowhere, with the possible exception next season of Vanderbilt, where what they're doing, I'm with you. This is not a criticism of Jerry Stackhouse. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I love him as a human being, and living in the triangle he had in the Raleigh-Durham area, that is, he had all of these amazing pickup games that he would create in the summer, and he would do it for charity, and he would also bring some great high school players in and college players in, and it was the greatest all collection of former Duke, Carolina, and NC State players and current players and high school players, and he put all of that together, all of it. And he really is. He's a guy that brings people together. He's a great human being. But I just don't know how this is going to work. And look, if Vandy hired Tommy Amaker to be their basketball coach, it would make all the sense in the world, because he's been at Harvard and he knows what it's like to be at a school that has such a commitment to its academics and how to handle that. But these are interesting times at Vandy, where you got an athletic director who ran the G League. You have a chancellor that's leaving in a few months. And now all of a sudden you're hiring a guy that is the ultimate basketball, pro basketball guy. It's going to be fascinating to follow. And it's also going to be interesting, Neil, to see if this means they're going to make any commitment to their football program, especially with its facilities, because they're beyond embarrassing. I mean, as somebody that calls games in each of these stadiums, I love Nashville. It's one of the best towns in this country. And the school is a great school. But I can promise you, if you got poured some truth serum down Derek Mason's throat, he would tell you just how difficult it is and challenging it has been to deal with a stadium that is that outdated. You go to it every other year. It is, and look, nobody cares what the television booth is like, but it's indescribable. I mean, like, it should have failed 300 inspection reports that they put us in that thing to call a game from there. So I hope that maybe, whether Stackhouse works out or not, I hope this means that Vanderbilt's going to make an actual commitment to football and basketball.
All right, let's switch gears to golf. My favorite sport. I'm going to be locked in starting with the Pro-Am. I'm diving in to this Masters.
Well, there is no Pro-Am.
Oh, well, there you go. Damn,
No, there's a par three contest.
That's what I meant. I meant the par three.
Right.
I'm totally locked in. I'm going to get some pimento cheese, and man, I'm ready to go. So you're going down there for the whole week. What are the storylines that the very casual golf guy like me should be locked into?
I don't want to ask you this. I'm rolling my eyes, but I'm going to ask you this, because there probably are people out there that do care, but I certainly do not. That's what that was just now. Okay. These are the biggest storylines. There are three of them. First one, always and forever, if he's in the tournament, will be Tiger Woods. He has not won the Masters in 14 years. He's not won a major championship in 11 years, but he has had consistent good health for the last 15 months, which really, you have to go back 13 years for the last time that he has had this kind of consistent health in his life. He didn't play a few weeks ago in Arnold Palmer's tournament, and he said his neck was kind of bothering him. He was just being more careful about the fact that he's 43 years old and he wanted to be completely prepared for the Masters. Anytime he tees up, he's a factor. He has 11 top fives in 21 Masters appearances. He's almost always on the front page of the leaderboard, although it's been 5 or 6 years since that's been the case, because he hasn't played in a few of them. I think he'll be a factor. I don't think he's the favorite. I don't think that he's the best player in the game right now, but I absolutely think he'll be a factor because of all the experience that he carries with him coming in. And so everything revolves around him. The best player in the game right now, although he's ranked third, Neil, is Rory McIlroy. He's had a tremendous start to the season. He's had a chance to win every tournament he's played in, winning a few weeks ago down in Pontevedra at the Players' Championship. He's done everything in golf but win the Masters. He's won every other major championship. He's won the Players. He's won the FedEx Cup title. He's won the Tour Championship. He's been a Ryder Cup hero. He's been number one in the world many different years. He is beloved everywhere. He is as American as he is Irish. He lives in South Florida. He married an American girl. He is beloved in Augusta. Now, I know Patrick Reed is public enemy number one, but when Rory McIlroy came to the first tee last year, you would have thought that someone, a member, had come out to the first tee. Like, he's beloved by everybody. He's done everything but win this major championship, and he's the best player in the game right now. And dealing with that pressure, and the best part about Rory, Neil, is how just genuine he is. He is brutally honest all the time. and it's refreshing to deal with that, deal with someone like that. But he will be the first to tell you, I am nervous. The more this goes on each year and I haven't won this tournament, the more it'll be in my mind. And part of you is like, man, I really appreciate your honesty. The other part is, I don't know that I would say that if I were you. So we're going to see how he deals with all of that again here in 2019. The third thing is this, is that for all of the shots that that Augusta National Golf Club has taken through the years, for all of the people that have never been to the place from afar, thinking of what it might feel like from afar, Augusta National, which I love, and I love the history and I love the tradition, and if somebody has gone there a million times, the people are beyond hospitable. It feels like Disney World with the way that they treat you there, which is unfortunately not the way that it's perceived by some that haven't been there. But regardless of that, it has become, Neil, the most progressive part of the game of golf with what they have done in the last few years. They now have, they are starting this year, the Augusta Women's Amateur Tournament, which is finishing at Augusta National Golf Club on Saturday. And immediately it's the biggest amateur tournament in female golf. That's this Saturday. They have the drive, chip, and putt for children of all ages that come on an annual basis. I believe this is the fifth time. And it is the premier youth event in the game of golf. And they have started these new endeavors in the last few years while everyone else that rips Augusta has had the chance to do that and hasn't done it. Augusta has. And they've also connected themselves to Latin America and to Asia with some amateur events over there so that they can, the winners of those events get to play in the Masters. They've done everything right in the last few years, regardless of what anyone thinks. And that's another story. It's just going into this tournament, it feels like the place is as progressive as it's ever been. They're taking some shots from some of our friends in the media saying, well, we shouldn't give them credit for this. They should have done this long ago. And it's just unbelievable to me. Instead of giving them credit for what they're doing and instead of ripping others for not doing it, we're still trying to find ways to scrutinize them, which I just don't understand. But I do. I think Tiger, Rory trying to complete the career Grand Slam and all the other things that are going on at Augusta are the biggest stories.
Now, for you, you're going to be in Augusta as you are in the very final days of preparation for your first marathon. You're running.
Oh boy!
You're running the Boston Marathon. I know your wife, Betsy, is an accomplished marathon runner. You, on the other hand, are not an accomplished
no.
marathon runner. Your first marathon is Boston. It is not an easy marathon to run, is the best I understand it. How are the preparations going? What is the anxiety level? And then just some of the logistics. The Masters doesn't finish until late Sunday, and they run that race pretty early on Monday, my man.
Yeah. All right. So let's go one by one here. The prep for it has gone extremely well. I did this plan that Hal Higdon uses. He's one of the more known marathon trainers in the world.
It's what I use.
And he's a pop. Okay. So there you go. And looking at it before I started it, I thought there's just no possible way that I can accomplish all this. And I'm proud to tell you, I've done every single one, every single day, what I was supposed to do. I've done it. And that's a pretty amazing feeling to be able to sit here today and say that. I'm in the tapering off phase now, going to run 4 miles a little later today. I've got an 8-miler on Saturday. And then next week's just a few runs before you get ready for the marathon.
Yeah.
But the 20-miler, the 19-miler, the 18-miler, all of those went well. And I felt a lot better than I thought I would feel. Certainly in the moment, you know, I needed my legs. It's hard to go downstairs or any of that. But a day later, I felt great.
Yeah.
Having said that, you gave me some great advice. You said, don't ever go further than what you're supposed to go. And I haven't done, I have definitely listened to you on that. My anxiety level though is really high because each time I do one of these runs, I think, how in the world could I take another step? So the idea of going 6 more miles than I've ever run before in my life is something that I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around.
You're going to get so much adrenaline on the day of the race that's going to push you through.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, I'm not stopping at any red lights or anything like that. So, you know, it's a 26.2-mile course that I get to continue to do, and I don't have to worry about cars coming or anything like that. So I just have to run and take in all of, like you were saying, the passion of that town. It's the biggest day of the year in Boston. It is a local holiday, Patriots Day. So just how festive it will be. I have attended it several times watching my wife do it, and it is an amazing experience. So hopefully I'm able to use some of that emotion that's around me to my benefit. But my anxiety level, make no mistake, is really high about it. So, but in terms of the Masters, I'm going to do the pregame show. I'm going to do all of our lead up coverage that I do every single year for SiriusXM, and I'll be off the air at 2 o'clock on Sunday. And that's my last responsibility that day. And then I'll be heading to Boston, and I believe I go off, Mr. McCready, sometime after 11 a.m. on Monday. And then, by the way, unless it's Tiger, who never does a media tour, I will be in New York the next morning, on Tuesday morning, with the Masters media tour. So it's those few days are going to be very interesting, and hopefully I make it through it. But I got to tell you, man, you as much as any friend that I have really enjoyed all of a sudden becoming someone that's completed marathons. And this has been a really rewarding experience for me. I had no idea. I thought this was simply something I was agreeing to do for my wife because she turned 40 and I told her I would run a marathon with her. But so far, all of the training and getting ready for this has been something that's made me a better person, not just health, just not just from a health standpoint, but just completely. And anybody that's out there that's ever thought, okay, in the back of my mind, I thought maybe I should do this, I would tell you to. It's an incredible experience that you'll never forget.
Yeah, it's one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. And I used to think people that said it, and I'm not the guy that puts the sticker on the car or all that stuff, but it's funny. It's such a daunting thing when you first take it on, because you think, yeah, I know that there's all these other people that run 26 miles, but 26 miles when you've never run more than, the most I'd ever run was like 7 or 8. 26 miles is a long way, and you jump into that and you think, I don't know, man, I don't know that I can do this. And even the day of the first marathon that I ran, I'll never forget this thought going through my mind. So in Chicago, you start in Grant Park, whatever it is, and you take off and you go north, like towards Wrigley. You don't actually go to Wrigley, but you get around Wrigleyville before you head back towards the city, and you ultimately go into the south side, and then you loop back up and you finish it in the park. So I was at the 6 mile mark, which is right around the Wrigleyville part of Chicago. And I remember seeing the sign for 6 miles, and I thought, holy shit, I've got 20 more miles to run. And even though I knew going in that was the deal, I start thinking in my mind, 20 miles is the furthest you've run. Can you do this? And, you know, and it's, you have those moments of doubt kick in and stuff. And then the other moment that I'll never forget, and I only had this the one time, because I've run 4 of them, but the first one was the one that and you'll enjoy this, because this feeling will hit you at some point in the 20-something miles. You think, I'm going to do this. I've got it. I'm going to make it. And I'm such a self-skeptical human being that for me, that feeling was, because I've spent my life, no joke, telling myself, you can't do that. Don't apply for that.
Right.
Don't apply for that job. You can't get it. Don't ask that girl out. She will say no. That has been my life soundtrack, man. I mean, it's the truth. And so I did all this training. And as you know, so much of training is alone. You are alone. You are alone with your thoughts. I know some people train in groups. I didn't. I trained by myself. Every single step of training was completely alone, alone with my thoughts, alone with all my self-doubt and all that stuff. And it was about 23, 24 miles in Chicago you could really start seeing the buildings and stuff. And I thought, and I knew how I felt. I thought, I've got it. And that feeling, man, is so cool. I'll tell you exactly when it was. It was at 23 miles, and I thought to myself, think of how many, because I did the same Higdon thing you did. I thought, think of how many 3 mile runs you've done over the last.
Yeah.
You do 3 mile runs all the time, and I thought, you've got it. And it was the best feeling. So, question, because I know Betsy runs like a 2.5 hour marathon. She's really good at it. What's your pace? And I think she's running with you. How are you managing that?
Yeah, I'm trying. That's the thing that I really don't want to care about. Like, I want to just complete this and enjoy it. It's not about time. It's not about goal. But I think any of us knows that there's some crap associated with that, that all of us are competitive enough to say, well, all right, if you're going to do this, you're going to try to do your best at it. And I've been running, and like you, almost exclusively, I've done this by myself. I think maybe two of the long runs I did with her, and we're certainly going to run this marathon together. She has no interest in running this by herself. She's not doing it to run a time. Her whole goal in this was for us to run the Boston Marathon together. So she will be running at my pace, and that's what she wants. There will be 20 times, Neil, during the race, I will tell her to please go, and she won't. She will say, that's not what this is about. So she will be right there along with me. But I think we have a real shot to break 4 hours. If we don't, and then I'm going to hop over that very quickly and say, let's just enjoy this and finish the marathon. Everything about all of the runs we've done so far have suggested that. I've been running 9 minute miles, no matter if it's a 4 mile run or it's an 18 mile run or if it's a 20 mile run.
Yeah, that's your pace. That's
been my pace. So yeah. We'll see if that's the case once we get through what is called Heartbreak Hill a few miles before the finish line. But if I get past the Newton Hills and Heartbreak Hill, once you get past that, the rest of the course at Boston is not that challenging. And the last few miles is, I don't know how to describe it to anybody unless they've seen it, especially after what happened a few years ago. The commitment to security is at an all-time high. But if you know anything about the city of Boston, anytime that city has ever taken a punch, they deliver 12 back at you. And so the fact that that happened a few years ago has only made everyone in the town even more passionate about this being their event and it being the biggest marathon, the most important marathon in the world. And the last couple of miles will be so emotional. And you're exactly right. If I can get to the 22, the 23 mile mark, it's a breeze from there, because people, just to see that sea of humanity carry you to the finish line will be one of the coolest things I ever do. And, yeah. I'll just say this in closing about the marathon, Neil. As you know, being as close a friend to me as you are, and being there for me, and one of the hardest things I've ever been through, just to be able to think about what my father would think about this, as we do this together, my wife and me is something that I'm definitely going to draw on during this race.
Yeah, he'd be super jacked up. He'd get a real kick out of it. And it's is your mom going to be there?
No, she's not. She will be following from afar. But it's just the two of us going up.
Yeah, she'll be super excited. That'll be a fun call to make. I get emotional thinking about it. It's a really cool thing. And you're right, though, those last few miles, like in Chicago, because I ran my first one, I went up there by myself. I went by myself for a lot of different reasons, and so it was really neat, because I didn't know anybody, and those last few miles, and in Chicago, it's like it is in Boston. There are people the entire way, but those last few miles, the streets are packed, and all these people are turning out. And they're just cheering. They're cheering for their family and stuff that's coming, but they cheer for everybody else too. And it was this really uplifting thing. I mean, when I finished, like, I had to walk a couple of miles back to my hotel, and it wasn't that bad. I was like, it was just cool. It was a neat thing. It makes you feel good about humanity that all these people get out and they cheer for total strangers who are just running. That's all they're doing. Especially people like me, because I ran 4 hours and 3 minutes or something, which is not some incredible athletic accomplishment. And they're all cheering for me like I'm a Olympic hero. And I thought it was really cool. So it'll be a really neat thing. You'll love it. You'll probably finish and immediately start thinking about your second marathon. I'm proud of you. I will be checking the website to see times and stuff, and just have fun with it. Don't worry about your time. If breaking 4 hours means something to you, then try to do it. But in the event that you don't let that take anything away from the accomplishment, because it doesn't.
I won't.
It doesn't matter.
Right. No. I just getting to do this and experiencing it. No question is the goal.
Well, my man, appreciate the time. Enjoy the Masters. Enjoy the last week of your training, and be cheering for you on that Monday.
I'm just disappointed you didn't want to talk about the LSU spring game.
You know, I did. I wanted to really break it down, but I need to study that depth chart for a while first. I need to. Ole Miss has a spring game on Saturday as well. It's at 3:00, and it's so funny because I'm not belittling fans at all. Any, I make a living off fans. I'm glad that they love football. It's just if they could know the truth about what coaches think about these spring games.
Oh my God!
Even the Ed Orgeron crazy type coach doesn't really want to do them.
The greatest thing about the LSU spring game is that and SEC Network, which I'm proud to work for, is that they have to last 2 hours, and we have to be off the air at 3:00, and I must toss it to Oxford, Mississippi at 3:00. That's the best thing about these games. But it, you know, listen, I'll be with McElroy and Spears. We'll do a talk show on LSU for a couple hours. But you're right. It's maybe it whets the appetite for football, but it certainly is far from what we love in the fall.
Yeah, because the fact that it's on television makes every coaching staff go, "We're not showing anything." Nothing.
Right. Yeah. Nothing. So vanilla.
Yeah. So vanilla. All right, man. Enjoy talking to you. I'll talk to you after the marathon. Good luck.
You got it, my friend. Appreciate it.
Bye. Again, our thanks to Taylor. He joined us on the Patterson and Earhart hotline. Patterson and Earhart, attorneys at law. They specialize in personal injury law and real estate law, but they have a general practice that can handle any of your legal needs. When you contact Patterson and Earhart, you're going to speak to one of the partners in the firm. Not some paralegal at a faceless corporate firm. If Patterson and Earhart can't help you, they'll get you to someone who can. John Calvin Patterson and Wes Earhart are Ole Miss guys. They're local guys. And when you call them, you're going to get one of them on the phone within the same day guaranteed. So whether you've been injured in a car wreck or have other legal issues, give them a call, 662-526-1992, or check out their website, pelaws.com. Your initial consultation is free. That does it for this edition of The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. Again, our thanks to Taylor Zarzer. We'll be back next week. Not sure exactly what's going to be on the table. I'm thinking some NFL draft talk, maybe some Major League Baseball talk, maybe an NBA preview, maybe a little bit of all of those things. So we'll touch on that, those topics and more on the next edition of The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. Until then, have a great weekend. Take care.